Welcome to the power of social media and how to make it work for your business. My name is Sarah Dimmerman, also known as Help Me Sarah, and today I'm in conversation with social media consultant Gary Hyman. Gary has more than 30 years of technology, business, and marketing experience on his resume. A software developer by trade, his career has taken him across Canada and as far as Japan. Whereas principal of a small systems integration company, he was integral in growing and selling the company to a NASDAQ-listed organization. Back in Canada, Gary immersed himself in internet technologies and began showing small businesses how to leverage social media to their best advantage. Today, he helps small businesses find, grow, and sell products and services to their target audience online and via social media. Gary lives in Toronto with his wife and son and joins me today to talk about what he knows best. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Sarah. Nice introduction. Great. Nice being here and talking with you.
For sure. So you're the guru of social media. So I'm not sure if there's a, I'm not looking for a textbook definition per se, but just so that we set this, the tone or the foundation for the podcast, maybe you could begin by just sharing the definition or how you would define social media. What is it?
Okay, that's a good question. There's so many different definitions of social media, but the way I like to describe social media, and it's a multitude of things, but it's a communication system really on steroids.
So yeah, it really
allows you to communicate with your audience out there, and in addition to that, it allows you to do advertising as well. I mean, you think of Facebook, for example. Facebook has collected so much demographic information, and they allow you to do target advertising, but at the same time, you have a whole messaging system, and you have a whole business side of Facebook with the Facebook pages, and you have Facebook personal profiles where just individual people are communicating and sharing information.
So if we can just, the brass basics are, I mean, when you think of social, we think of interaction, right? And communication and media being, I mean, media can be anything, right? From television to internet to radio. But in this instance, social media is kind of encompasses specifically what we're doing online, correct?
Exactly. It's all over the internet. And then the internet's really extended beyond just sitting at your desktop, because then you've got the smartphones as well.
Right. So
where you're connected onto the internet. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So anything that allows you to get access to the internet and to be able to communicate. And I know, so social media can come in the form of sites, like you talked about Facebook. I guess it can also come in the form of apps, right? Now, I'm not sure now, not being so technology savvy myself. I mean, Facebook does not have an app, correct? Or like Facebook is a site.
Yeah, Facebook is a site. It's a whole big application from technical terms, but Facebook is a site that you would actually use. And then there's the competitor social media sites such as LinkedIn, or there's Twitter, there's Pinterest. There's actually literally hundreds of social media networks and social media sites globally. But the main ones that are in use are Facebook, in North America anyway, and Europe is Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and Google+.
What about Instagram?
Instagram is also another one owned by Facebook. So there again is another social network.
Did you say
by nature, you've got a lot of people interacting. You've got a lot of people online, and it's just a social network by nature, and people are sharing and communicating. And yes,
almost to an extreme, right? You said like on steroids.
Yeah, exactly, and then, you know, then you can start switching around, not so much on Instagram right now, but on Facebook, on LinkedIn. Now you're talking about advertising.
Can we hold off on that just for a minute?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So I mean, I'm thinking too that in my age demographic, I'm using mostly Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. I think a lot of my peers may also be using Instagram, but what is the one that the younger generation is using? And maybe it is Instagram that I'm thinking, or Pinterest. I mean, do you find that certain age demographics tend to gravitate towards certain applications, social media applications, more than others?
There is a demographic market for sure. And for example, when you look at Pinterest, you've got, and I'm not sure about the exact statistic, but you've got upwards of 80% are female based.
Okay.
And then when you look at Facebook, you're looking at, the younger generation actually migrated onto Instagram.
Okay.
From Facebook. So now you're left with, for the most part, you're left with the 40, 45 plus year olds, and maybe even older now on the Facebook.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean that you don't have under 40 year olds using Facebook.
And in terms of, I mean, your work is mostly, well, it's for small businesses, but I'm sure that in your journey, you'd know a little bit about each, like what you would use for personal use particularly, or what you would use for business. So in terms of, because this podcast is mostly directed towards, you know, people who have small businesses or are trying to promote their brand, would you say that Facebook and LinkedIn are still the primary applications that small businesses are focused on?
That's another good question. It really comes down to what your business does, what your objective is, what you want to accomplish. And once you understand that, then there's the right platform for you. And you don't want to immerse yourself into so many different platforms that you don't have enough time for regular business
and
activity. So it really depends on your business objective, what you want to accomplish. And
I guess you don't want to become, as you said, you don't want to become too thin in terms of trying to do too much, but perhaps you also don't want to dilute. Perhaps you want to focus, you want to find out, as you said, to pinpoint which are the social media applications that are best suited for you, and then really focus on those, invest your time and energy and maybe money in those, as opposed to doing a little bit here, a little bit there.
You've got it. As long as you've got an objective and you go for it, I think you're good to go. And you won't burn your time on all the other platforms that will have no return for you.
Okay. So maybe this is a redundant question, especially in your line of work, because you wouldn't be doing what you're doing if there wasn't a need for it. But, you know, I have to ask this question anyway, in terms of maybe, I was going to say, does social media really have the power to help grow a business or grow a brand? Maybe the question should more be, how much power does social media have to grow a business or a brand?
Well, another great question. I mean, you look at the numbers. You look at the numbers of people that are using social media, that are just on social media. I mean, you look over a billion on Facebook alone, you know, half a billion on Google Plus, and, you know, I can just go through all the different numbers, but you've got an entire audience. You've got a global audience. Not right. To say that you're going to use a global audience, but you've got a global audience that's there. And every business, as far as I'm concerned, every business has their clients somewhere on social media, on one of the networks, at least. And obviously, you need to pick the right networks.
And by clients, you don't mean, well, maybe current clients to some extent, but potential clients, I would imagine, is even more important.
Potential clients, exactly. Potential clients that are on different social medias. And as long as you can have, you have to have a crystal clear message of what you do, how you can help your audience, and then what your audience should actually do next.
So kind of a social, like a social media plan.
Exactly. Have some type of plan, have some type of branding message, because we're kind of circling back around to the actual branding and the power of branding. As long as you've got the right branding, confusing.
Right.
And you don't confuse your potential customer, your potential client, your audience. It doesn't matter where they land on which different social media platform. You don't confuse them. And you have a consistent message that is going out there and is amplifying your brand for them. You have the potential to actually grow your brand.
So what? So what? Sorry, what?
You can go back. I'm sorry for interrupting, but you can go. You know, you can extend it to just even look at the bigger players. You look at Red Bull. You look at Starbucks. You look at Apple, and you look at all these companies, what they have done, and you see the consistent messaging that is coming out onto the different channels, and they have grown their brand online. And it's exactly the same for the smaller business as well.
So it's all part of like an advertising package in some way, like how you want to market yourself. What I'm hearing you say is you don't want to be just hodgepodge, throw lines out here indiscriminately type of thing. You want to be more, as you said, targeted. You want to be, more kind of proactive and think specifically about what you're saying and how you're saying it, rather than just throwing out a line and hoping to reel people in with any old message.
And that's exactly it. You need a plan. It's just like it's an extension of your business.
Right.
That's really what it is. It's a tool that's out there for you to use, and it just extends your business messaging platform that you can use to promote your brand out there. But you need a plan for it, just like you have a marketing plan for your business, an advertising and promotion plan for your business, financial plan for your business. You need a social media plan for your business and how you are going to engage with your audience or attract your audience.
So when you talk about, you talked earlier about time, you know, and being using your time efficiently. I mean, is there like a formula in terms of, you know, I should be going on Twitter every 15 minutes and posting a tweet, you know, I should be going on Facebook once a day and posting something? Is there kind of like an amount of time, you know, and what are some time-saving tips you could give when using social media?
Well, okay, so you think about the shiny object syndrome and how there's so many different aspects of time, and social media, as probably your audience knows, can just totally suck up your time.
Right.
It's the shiny object syndrome. You just go from one post to the next, and you just end up in a big black hole. 3 hours later, you surface and kind of what have you accomplished. So there's that whole aspect. Then there's the other side of the coin, where you have a plan and you want to get your messaging out about your brand to your audience. Now, let's just take Twitter, for example. Twitter is, and it's a great platform. Twitter is an excellent platform. It just allows you to jump into conversations and get hold of people, have communication with them, and pull them into your circle. However, when you're putting your plan out there and your messaging is being tweeted out, think about Twitter as an exceptionally noisy platform. There's over 500 million conversations that are happening on a daily basis.
Right.
So 500 million conversations, if you think about how the heck are you going to get above this noise?
Right.
Because when you put out one tweet and you're expecting your audience to read it, the life of a tweet, it's different for everybody, but generally it's in the neighborhood between 15, 20, maximum 30 minutes. So if the person who you're intending to get the message to, that tweet, is not logged in at that time, within 15 to 20 minutes, that tweet's off the screen and they'll never see your message.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea for you to get heard is to tweet out more frequently.
Right.
In hopes that your audience will see it. Now, there's all different numbers. It depends on the amount of followers you have, depends on who your audience is. But generally speaking, you're looking at between 3 to 8 tweets per hour.
So, and you had previously showed me or sent me a link to something that allowed me to kind of preset tweets to go out even like automatically. So I didn't have to actually be sitting at my computer or my smartphone every, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So there are tools out there. And, when I do bring this up to people about you have to put, 3 to 8 tweets out per hour and give some scenarios behind it, can you imagine, sitting with your patient, for example, and hold on, I just have to tweet out another one because I have to reach this, 5 tweets per hour. It's just not a practical thing to do.
Right.
So the best way to approach that is to use tools. And there's one specific tool that I use. It's called Social Oomph.
Social what? And
Social Oomph.
Oomph. Okay.
Social and OOMPH.
Right.
And I'm more than happy to provide links for your audience as well for that.
Okay. So just to go back to that time aspect, I was asking about, I guess what I'm hearing is maybe there isn't a specific formula in terms of the amount of time, but you do need to be knowledgeable about how the system works. And as you said, for Twitter, for example, how time limited the tweets are, so that even if you think you're sending out, 1 or 2 tweets a day, really you're attracting or engaging with a very minimal number of people. So, and then there are time saving tools that you just mentioned that allows you to be effective, but not literally having to go on your phone as much as what you would need to be doing.
Yeah, and this doesn't take away the personal engagement type of thing that you should be doing, because you should be personally engaging with your audience.
Right.
So you still have to use these tools. So you get your messages out on Twitter, and these tools are also good for LinkedIn and for Facebook as well, because you'll be notified on Facebook when someone likes a post or shares a post. You can set it up that you're notified by email.
Right.
As soon as you get notified, then you jump onto Facebook. So instead of just hanging out on Facebook on your business page and waiting for someone to share your stuff, you just wait for the message that someone has done it.
Right.
And then you go in. So these are...
Then you would go in and interact with that person?
And then you engage, exactly. You interact with that person, you thank them, or whatever conversation is happening between the both of you.
Right. So just going back to another question that I asked about how much power social media has to promote your product or brand. I mean, I think I know the answer to that. I think, and you tell me if I'm correct, that I think that social media has tremendous power, but if you just sit there and wait for it to work, that's not going to work. You've got to put pre-planning into it, and you've got to put time into making it successful.
Yeah, all of the above. You can't sit back and just post pictures with no plan.
Right.
You have to have a plan on what you actually want to accomplish.
And I guess if you're not a business and you're a person who's just enjoying finding old friends or making new friends, then posting pictures or going on, once every week or so is fine. But we're talking more specifically about using social media for your business advantage, correct?
That's right, just for your business. From a personal perspective, whatever you were doing before and doing now, that still holds true.
Yeah. And so I have to ask, is there a wrong way to use social media?
Is there a wrong way to use social media? Well, if you think about it, if you just jump on the platform, if you have a business and you want to get your brand, your messaging out there, your objective is to provide, for example, certain coaching services to an audience out there.
Right.
And you jump on and you're great with photography, and I'm just pulling these ideas out of, the sky right now. And you love photography, and there's a platform called Pinterest.
Right.
And it's great with images. And you jump on that platform, and you just start posting. So you have no plan.
Right.
You don't understand your demographics.
Right.
Who you're trying to reach.
Right.
And what you're actually trying to do. So you're using these platforms at random. So in my mind, it really circles back to that plan and and having a strategy.
So, and that's where you might come in, is helping people develop that plan, correct?
Yeah, in a sense, and that's what I do, because what I do find is the majority of people I speak to, they do have their social media networks all set up for their company. But when I speak, and then they get involved in the social media, they do their posting, they do their activity, and then 3, 4, 5 months later, they back off the whole thing because there's no return on investment for them.
So how can you, sorry, go ahead. So I guess that would lead me to ask, how do you measure return on investment? Like, maybe let's get into then what you were speaking about earlier about advertising, you know, questions such as, is social media really free? I mean, we consider it to be free, but is that the most effective way to use it?
Yeah, and so there's a number of different questions there. We're talking about return on investment. We're right. talking about free, and we're talking about a wrong way to use it.
Right.
And
so,
that's
so yeah.
Another thing, wrong way is going into the whole scenario of using social media, thinking that it's free. First of all, you've got a whole time element that you have to justify for yourself.
Sorry, the whole which element?
A time, your
time
own personal time,
right.
or the time of someone that you're going to hire to manage your social media.
Right.
So you've got that whole aspect about it. Then you've got the aspect of advertising. So it's not free when you think about advertising. Facebook has, and I believe I started off talking about the Facebook advertising. But when you look at what Facebook has done and collected the information about people in a sneaky way, I think, but what they've done is made it into a huge business for themselves.
Tell us more about how that works.
Can you repeat that, please?
Sorry, can you tell us more about how that works, what Facebook does for people who don't know?
For sure. And what they have done over time is they have collected the demographics of the people that are on Facebook. And you think about it, when you signed up for Facebook, they prompted you and prodded you for maybe 2 years to fill out your information. What are your likes? What are your interests? How old are you? And they've got all this information that they use in their advertising engine. So if you are in business and you want to do targeted advertising to a group, say, for example, that are males between 55 and 65 year old, they have a specific interest, they reside in Toronto, and you can add more criteria on there, you can do highly targeted advertising, and the advertising is generally inexpensive, but it still costs. So you have to go into it thinking with a budget.
What are the costs like? I've never investigated that. Do you know?
It's on a pay-per-click. There's different mechanisms.
Okay.
So you can have it per how many ads get displayed, or you can have it on a per-click basis. So you can spend maybe 4 cents a click. You can spend $1 a click. It depends on Facebook's algorithm.
So just a question. What I've always understood too, and you know, I understand certainly about them collecting data from what you input, but my understanding is that they're even sneakier than that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that sometimes some of those ads are also specifically targeted to me after I've gone on other sites to look for information. So, for example, if I'm planning a trip, is it true that Facebook can pick up on that so that they can actually start sending me information about hotels, for example?
I believe they can, and it's called retargeting. So the whole idea behind the retargeting, and Google does this as well with their AdWords, is you visit a site, and typically the consumer doesn't buy right away, and this is the theory behind retargeting. They don't buy right away, but they may go and visit another site, and if they see the ad, or put something in their mind, they visit another site, and they see that same ad. And at some point in time, they're going to click on that ad, and they will purchase that product.
Right.
So statistically, it works in the favor of the vendor putting out retargeting ads. So the bottom line is, first of all, it's called retargeting. Google does it, and I believe Facebook does it as well.
But really, I mean, so at times when I've specifically gone to look to see what kind of ads I'm being sent, I'm aware of it. However, I mean, and I'm sure that people must be looking at those ads, otherwise nobody would be using them. But really, are they almost subliminal in a way? Because I don't even know where the ads are on my Facebook page. I've never actually clicked on an ad in any social media site that I've been on. I mean, how successful are people? I mean, as I said, I would imagine that there must be some success rate.
Yeah, how successful? Basically, you have to start looking at the bottom line, the revenues and the profits of Facebook, and they are highly successful in advertising, and then starting to shove it off onto a mobile environment as well, and that's really where the next growth engine is for them. Desktop will be decreasing, and mobile will be increasing as well. And that's what is generally all the platforms in terms of advertising. Google's moving to advertising, and LinkedIn as well, and Facebook too.
And as you said, the advertising is specifically targeted advertising. So you tell these social media companies, or I mean, not specifically like a president, you let them know what you need and your target audience, and then they target your ads specifically at the people that they know would be interested in them.
Yeah, exactly. You set up different types of campaigns.
Right.
And you can have different campaigns structured for different demographics and different interest groups. And you can take it as far as doing something called A/B split testing. So you can actually have an ad running which, for example, may have two different graphics.
Right.
It's the same ad, and it has the same objective. And with the insights, let's just talk Facebook for now, the Facebook insights and the analytics behind it tells you that the image B is performing better than image A. So you can drop image A, and you can keep on doing these A/B split tests. So you approach it from a pure marketing perspective and see what performs better. And they have great tools to help you with your return on investment, circling back to the question. So that's one side of the equation, is using the advertising tools, because if you know you're spending a dollar on advertising, and you're making making $1.04 in revenue, then you know what your return on investment is. Obviously, you need to factor in your time. But then there's the whole other side of the equation, which I like to call a return on relationship. Okay?
Which is what?
Which is, it's so, so difficult to measure a return on relationship. What are you going to do? You're going to track the time that you spend online every single minute, and then you have to be able to associate it with a specific action on the social media and the revenues that it generates. I mean, you need a whole organization to take care of that for you. It's absolutely insane.
Right.
But they're definitely, and I use the term return on relationship because it's apparent. It's there.
So what is it? What is a return on relation? I mean, when you say return on relationship, I think of more about not so much dollars and cents, but more about the networking that you're doing with your audience. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, and it can go many different ways. And I can give you a perfect example. Maybe it was about 4 years ago where I jumped onto Twitter, 5 years ago, jumped onto Twitter, and I built up a community, and I was training a group of people on how to do something specific on Twitter, on that social media network.
Yeah.
And I developed a relationship with them. And then one of the ladies actually said, goodbye, I'm leaving Twitter, I'm going to a full-time job now. And this was like 2 years after the fact. And said goodbye to her and carried on with the other people. And then a couple of years later after that, I actually got a phone call from a company who wanted me to do a presentation at one of their summits.
Okay.
I did the presentation, and I found out, after asking them questions, how did they hear of me? How did they get to me? And it was this lady from 4 years ago who was on Twitter, who I taught, who made the referral to give me a call. So that's what I mean about return on relationship.
Yeah, it's hard to measure it in dollars and cents, but certainly when you hear of that kind of stuff, you realize the power of social media.
Exactly, and you don't know what corner it's really going to come out of.
Well, it's like that old saying of never burn your bridges, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But in social media, you have so many bridges to be worried about, right? Because, well, I mean, we've seen examples of people posting things without thinking it through well enough and then getting into lots of trouble.
Well, you have a plan, you have a strategy, you have a content calendar, a posting calendar. You know when your content's going out. You know what type of content's going out 30, 60 days ahead of time.
Right.
And you've got more bridges to build than burn if you follow that approach.
So I'm thinking, you know, it's funny, we talk about return on relationship, and I don't know whether the number of Twitter followers or the number of likes on your Facebook business page, you know, are a reflection of return on relationship. But I know Twitter, I often say that Twitter is like a yo-yo, you know, and that the numbers can go up and down all the time. I can never quite figure out what's getting my numbers to go up or down, but that's, I guess, where you would come in, correct?
Yeah, first of all, part of it is a numbers game. And you do need numbers, because if you start taking into account conversion rates, so in the marketing world, you're looking at how many people you convert into to get onto your email list, and then how many you convert from the email list into a sale. So looking from a strictly business perspective, you need to, in a sense, understand those conversion rates. So numbers do speak, first of all. So the higher numbers you have, the better it is. However, you have to have the right numbers.
And the quality.
The right people.
Right.
That are following you.
Right.
If you're in the world of being a plumber.
Right.
And you're trying to follow, maybe that's a bad example, plumber, and you're trying to follow people, and a plumber based in Toronto, and you're trying to follow people in Abu Dhabi.
Right.
Just random people.
Right.
Maybe a jet line owner or something like that.
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Because it's not going to move your business in the direction that you want it to move.
And conversely, I mean, not everybody follows you back, right? So you may follow certain people, but that's not going to help your business. The people that are following you, either without you following them back or following you because you followed them, that are the ones that are going to be getting your tweets potentially, correct?
That's correct. In a sense, yes. And just remember, Twitter is a noisy environment, so they may not even see your tweet.
That's right.
If they follow you.
Right.
And there's ways for them to actually see it by putting you on a list and doing those type of things. But I mean, the bottom line is you have to make sure that the audience is the correct audience, an audience that's interested in you, you're interested in them.
So as long as
you have that plan and go after those people and consciously connect with them, whether they follow you back or not is another story.
Yeah.
As long as you consciously connect with them, that's kind of the approach that you want to take.
But if you consciously connect with them and they don't follow you back, how do you continue a relationship with them?
You don't.
You can't. You don't,
but it's up to, you know, when everybody is individual, everybody has their own motives,
right?
What they want to do. You know, how do you force someone to be your friend, you know, even on the street in real life?
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like, I followed you, I'm going to be your friend, you better be my friend. You know,
yeah.
It just doesn't work like that in a way. And it's just, and it works in a very similar way social media.
I think you've got to develop a little bit of a thick skin when you're participating in this, don't you find? Because you don't want to take it personally.
No, you don't. And actually, it's better because at times you're actually hiding behind the screen, so you don't get to see the face.
But if you know somebody in the business world and you follow them and they don't follow you back, as you said, you don't know what their motives are. They may only be following people that are specific, as you said, part of their plan. They may not just want to follow indiscriminately. It's not about that they don't like you per se. It's just that maybe your particular brand doesn't fall within what they want to follow.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on there. You know, it's specific to each individual and what their objectives are, what their motives are, and as long as you don't take it personally, and yes, maybe you do have to develop a thick skin, in a sense, and just don't take it personally.
And what about, I know there are so many people that you would not think would have, like, followers in the thousands, you know, other than people that are celebrities, you know, and sometimes you have to be careful that even those, you know, Twitter sites are legit. But do people actually buy names off of lists, for example?
Unfortunately, they do buy names, and it's kind of ridiculous. It's like buying your friends,
right?
In a way, you know, I've got $1,000. I mean, well, in this case, on Twitter, it's like, you know, 1,000 friends will cost you $25.
And there are places that sell these lists. So how do they get the names even?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea how they get them, but they get them.
Right.
And I would recommend steering as far away as possible from that. Number one, you don't know the source. You don't know where they're coming from.
Right.
You don't know the demographics. You just don't know anything about that. Rather grow your list in a couple different ways. You definitely want interested people that are interested in some type of relationship with you in terms of your business and what you're offering.
Right.
And you can go out and do that organically by targeting certain people and using the tools that are provided right in Twitter. Use the advanced search and go and search out specific people, specific conversations.
And even using things like hashtags, I know, in terms of drawing people into the conversation, correct? Because some people will search by hashtag, is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're looking for people that are having conversations about hospitals, maybe right. There's a hashtag hospital.
Right. Now,
you listen to those conversations and maybe there's interesting people on there that you can connect with.
Now, are hashtags specific to Twitter or do people use hashtags on other social media applications like LinkedIn and Facebook?
Yeah, it's right throughout now. You can use them on all the different platforms, and the hashtag really is just a method to categorize the conversation in a specific folder. So you can go to that folder and look at all the conversations about that specific topic, so to speak.
I know I don't want to favor Twitter. I know we've spent a lot of time on Twitter.
Yeah.
Anything that you want to say about LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, in terms of, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, any of those that are really important tips that people need to know or should know about those in terms of growing a business?
Sure. LinkedIn is a great platform, not just only business to business, but it's also business to consumer. It all depends on the business that you're in. But LinkedIn, take into account the average salary or revenue, the average salary of an individual on LinkedIn is over $106,000.
Okay.
US dollars. So you've got quite a rich audience out there. You can also reach decision makers on LinkedIn directly by using the right tools and being on the right plan. And by the way, cost comes into play on that one. So you need to figure in a cost about that one into your budget.
In terms of advertising, you mean?
In turn, if you want to advertise or if you want to be on the right LinkedIn plan. So you can join on the free plan. That's great, but it's limited. So if you're really serious about targeting and communicating with specific decision makers, on LinkedIn, you're probably going to want to up the plan to, I forget what the plan's called.
Right, so like a gold membership plan. Or something like that, where you'd be accessing other people who are part of a more elite plan or more of a specific plan.
You just got better reach, you got better tools to search people on, and more criteria to use to find the right people.
And of course, you'd need to know your way around it, because I'm sure that I use LinkedIn like, you know, a tenth of what I could be doing, because all I really do is sometimes send out like a link to an article on LinkedIn. I have no clue who gets it or where I'm sending it, you know, but so yeah. it's very, you know, not specific.
Yeah, and you know, there's a great way to use LinkedIn. I call it, you can use it passively and you can use it actively.
Mm-hmm.
But the passive way of using it is making sure your profile is constructed correctly. And what I mean by correctly is constructing it in a way that your target audience would be searching for you. I know it's kind of a reverse way of thinking about things,
mm-hmm.
but your audience is looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're looking for a chiropractor
mm-hmm.
in Toronto, and they key in chiropractor Toronto. And your profile has to be constructed in a way that returns the search results to them on the top of the list.
So you'd want to make sure that at least the word chiropractor was in there, but potentially maybe even at the beginning or something like that?
Throughout your profile.
Yeah.
So there's a way to construct your profile to make sure you're hitting the right keywords, and we're calling them keyword phrases that your audience is keying in looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea is for you to be returned to the top of the LinkedIn search heap.
Yeah, I've seen that being very effective, because my daughter, who's a graphic designer, often gets people actually contacting her through LinkedIn, offering her positions. So she must have done something right, because people are actually finding her through LinkedIn, and she's getting very good offers by being on LinkedIn.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, one example of how it would work. And the same thing for your audience. Doesn't matter what business you're in. They should think about how their customers are looking for them
right.
and their services, and then construct their LinkedIn profile with that in mind, not just like a pure resume as it was used in the past.
Yeah. What about Facebook? I know, for example, I have a personal page. You know, where friends, so, you know, some real friends, some more acquaintances will join, you know, will connect as friends, so called. But then I have a specific, I think it used to be called a fan page. I didn't ever feel comfortable with that name. I'm not even sure if it's called that anymore, but it's a business page where I will direct people who are more colleagues or clients to like, so that they can see what I'm posting. Is that accurate?
That is correct. If I'm understanding your question correctly, so you do have a personal page, you do have a business page or fan page, whatever you want to call it. There's different algorithms for both of the pages. The personal, how Facebook looks at a personal page and how they look at a business page, they look at completely differently.
Right.
So,
that's
on a personal page, their reach is a lot greater. There's a limitation on the amount of people that you can have as your friends, so-called Facebook friends. There's supposedly no limit on the business page. It's meant for business. But the reach is a lot different. It's a lot lower. And, you know, gone are the days that you used to get 50, 60, 70% reach on a post on your business page. You know, you're lucky if you get 2, 3, 4%.
Right.
In an organic way, and this is where advertising comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And then you advertise the posts that you actually put onto your Facebook page.
Yeah, so there's a lot more than what meets the eye.
Mm-hmm. And that all extends, by the way, your Facebook profile being constructed properly, that it appears in the Google search engine. So you don't lock it down, it appears in the Google search engine. And the reason why I'm mentioning Google is because Google owns over 65% of the global search market.
Yes.
So, I mean, how are you searching for things? I mean, you're probably using Google. I know.
For sure. I'm using Google.
Else I'm talking to.
I'm using Google and just putting in keywords, as you said.
Exactly.
Or phrases.
So if you put in keywords about a specific topic that you're interested in, someone has a Facebook page that's constructed correctly, it will appear in the Facebook search.
And that's about making sure that there are keywords as part of your post, correct?
Yeah, and it's a little more than keywords, but for all intents and purposes, you're looking at the right keywords. There obviously needs to be a certain amount of engagement on it. You know, how much posts are actually liked and shared. And I personally don't know the formula that Google uses, and Google will never let anybody know. And apparently, there's over 200 ranking factors that they do use to make sure a post or an entry appears in their results.
Right.
So who knows what they're using? You can only I can only assume using industry really best practices on what you really should do on the different platforms to make it appear on Google.
Anything that you want to mention about Instagram? I was thinking Snapchat too, but I think Snapchat is really intended for a younger audience, correct?
I believe so. I'm probably going to pass on the comments on those two environments only because I have them, but I don't use them.
Right.
Because I don't have the time to use them.
Right.
Because I'm involved in all... I'm literally posting on all the other channels.
Yeah, and I guess if you're using Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, you're using those are the three, I think, one of the three most widely used platforms in terms of promoting. Am I correct? Right. So just
and then sorry to interrupt you, but then I also think about my target audience, and I'm just kind of rationalizing why I'm not Instagram and Snapchat and.
Right.
It's just not my target audience, and there's only so many hours in the day there.
Same for Pinterest, maybe, correct?
Pinterest is a contender. I am on Pinterest. In the early days, I actually was very active on Pinterest until I established who the market was and the demographics on Pinterest, and they're just not part of my market. But every time I'm promoting a post, every time I write a blog post, it does go up to Pinterest, and it does get shared amongst the community there.
Right.
I do make sure of that. So
it's a full-time job.
It is. So a lot of people do understate the amount of time that's required, but if you have a succinct plan and a plan that really aligns with your business objective,
right,
and you be totally rational about it, and you put budget numbers to it and metrics and what you want to get out of it on a monthly or a quarterly basis, then you're in better shape than doing it from a random fashion.
Can you actually grow an email list from social media?
You can, and that's what I highly recommend. I, in a sense, recommend that you think of it as a hub and spoke type of scenario where your email list is probably residing, being fed from your website. So your home base is your website where your email list is. Your email list is gold. The people on that list are gold and you treat them as so.
Right.
Now to get people onto that list, just think about your social media channels is really a spoke into the actual email list. There are different spokes into the email list.
So let me make sure I understand you correctly. For example, on my Help Me Sara website, I have a little box that allows people to put their email address in to get a monthly newsletter. Is that the kind of driving people to my site? To fill out that box, is that what you're referring to in terms of generating an email list?
So your monthly newsletter. So you would maybe have a specific landing page, I'm going to call it a landing page, that maybe has a video on you giving the benefits of why they should sign up for the monthly newsletter.
Okay.
And from Twitter, let's just talk Twitter, you may have within your profile, there's a number of different ways you can do it. You have in your profile links that drive them to that landing page, or you can pin a tweet to the top of your timeline that is specific to drive people to that landing page. Or you automate the tweets that are going out. So maybe you have one of those tweets per hour that drive your audience back to that landing page.
So would you
similar for Facebook and LinkedIn, and there's so many different ways to do it that it becomes a hub and spoke.
Don't you find that people are reluctant to sign up for newsletters? They get so much information into their email, into their boxes, that they typically will not sign up for newsletters? Or do you find that they do want to sign up if it's a topic that they're specifically interested in?
Well, I'm a personal believer that the newsletter wording is not the ultimate wording to use. So the first thing is you need to understand what your audience really needs right now at this point in time. And this is a whole other topic to really talk about and how to really find that out. But you find out what they really want, and you construct something to give away to them what they want. So you find out what they want, you develop what they want, and you give them what they want.
Yeah.
And you have that free thing that you're giving away because they want it, and you make it highly valuable.
Right.
Put a lot of value into that.
Right.
And you give them exactly what they want. And you're more apt to get more people to sign up for what they actually want right now. And that changes. That's so dynamic, and it changes over time. And you have to be constantly polling your audience about that.
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is the word newsletter is almost passé, and it's too general. So if you know that your audience, in my case, for example, want to know more about family relationships or parenting relationships, for example, then that's what I would be offering them, free information about that, correct?
That's what I would do, essentially find out through polling them, asking your audience, what do you guys want right now? What is it that's going to make your life better? What do you want?
And by audience, you mean like your social media following audience, correct?
Everybody. So from your perspective, your patients, your social media audience, and you do it in all different ways. I mean, patients, you can ask them through a conversation. You can send them out a survey. From your social media, then you construct a survey. So you can have a perpetual survey that's running in an automated fashion. You can see I'm a believer of automating a lot of things.
Yeah, well certainly it's a time saver, right? If you have those things in place, then it's almost like having an assistant that you're not paying for.
Yeah, exactly. So once a week you check the results and you figure out what you need to do with these results, what's the action behind them, and does that change anything, you know, that you have in place right now, where you can offer something different to help your audience.
Well, I heard you talk about being passive versus active earlier, and I think that that's coming out very loud and clear for me is, you know, with any of these things, you've got to be actively involved and constantly on top of things to see what's working, what isn't, and changing it up if it's not working.
That's correct, and that's where now you've got a wall that's sitting between. This is not like real life in a way where you are in a shoe store and someone comes in to buy a pair of shoes and you can see them pick up the yellow shoes and put down the yellow shoes and pick up the green shoes and then purchase that, and you can ask them questions on the way out. So you see that in real life. In an online environment, you don't see really what's happening on your side. You don't see your audience.
Right.
You really need to put something in between you and your audience so you can understand exactly what they're doing, and that comes down to metrics and analytics. So there are tools, and there are free tools available, but just Everything has to be structured correctly so you can tell what your audience is reading. What's the most favorite content? Oh, they like this content better than the content I put out last month. Then you know to maybe up the ante on that content, for example.
So as a consultant, you might come in and help to set all this up and maybe visit periodically to make sure things are going as planned, or would you actually hire yourself out to businesses like to be there for periods of weeks?
It depends on the engagement, but the first scenario that you gave in terms of coming in, helping the companies really understand what they really need to do, kind of iron out a strategy for them, and then provide them with the actual strategy and say, this is what really has to happen to have a better chance of success using social media and the online environment.
Do you find that most small companies or larger companies actually hire like a social media person to be doing that as his or her job?
They do. A lot of them do, and they hire the wrong people. So what they do is a lot of companies are actually hiring like these fresh grads right out of school. Nothing wrong with that.
What are they graduating from?
All different schools, university.
No, but I mean, is there a social media degree or course?
Not that there. Social media is mixed into the actual courses right now.
Like advertising or something?
Into the different curriculums.
Right.
But what they're doing is they're hiring a social media fresh grad coming into a director level role. So
right.
They're supposed to put in the whole strategy. They're supposed to know everything about the budget. They're supposed to know everything about social media to make it function from a high level perspective. In reality, they can't.
So
a lot of companies are doing that, in my opinion. It's not the correct way to approach it. They're pulling in a too junior position into a too senior role.
So would your role potentially be to go in and actually help that person who's the fresh grad figure out what's going on and kind of set them on their way?
I have before, and absolutely I would. So I give them, basically I train them, and I give them the information they need so they can become successful and put the right plan in place. Yeah.
Well, you know, I just even listening to you, knowing, you know, wanting to be involved in the social media, understanding the importance of it, but feeling a little bit overwhelmed with everything. So mm-hmm. I can understand how invaluable your role would be, you know, even for somebody like myself to come in and kind of set me on the right path, because just battling through it and, you know, it's almost like, it's kind of like parenting in a way, you know, if you learn as you go, but there's so much more to know if you consult with an expert sometimes. So is there anything that I haven't discussed or uncovered that you feel that my audience should know right away to use social media effectively?
Yeah, that's kind of like the, you may have seen that image of the iceberg on the water. So we've tackled the top of the iceberg.
Right.
And there is a lot that's below the water, but to really go into that is probably totally, it would be more than overwhelming. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think what you've given us is a good taste of what we need to know, and especially, you know, the whole idea of pre-planning and executing properly so that you can get, you know, most effective reach, but also efficient use of your time.
For sure.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say one kind of last thing. If I were to, for your audience to actually do, is just one little tactical item, and it could make the world a difference for their business.
Okay. Waiting with bated breath. Yes.
Is really making sure that you have a Google Plus local listing business page. Because what that does, it's kind of that passive scenario again, where your audience is searching for you. And if you don't have, and a lot of people don't have, the local listing page, they won't appear on the Google business listing. And we're talking about Google Maps. And the more and more we're going into the social media and the mobile space, smartphones are being used. So if someone's walking down the street and they key in, they pull up their Google Map on their Android device and they key in a search term, and if you're not in the business listings, then you will not appear on the actual Google Map.
So how do you get a listing on that?
Either you can Google it or you can see me.
Okay.
One of the two.
Okay, excellent. That's great advice. I want to thank you so much for sharing your great breadth of knowledge on the subject. I know that I'll be, you know, I've taken careful note of what you said, and I'm certainly going to be applying what I've learned, and I'm sure that many of my audience members will too. And to see a full listing of all Help Me Sara podcasts, and for more about Gary Hyman and ways to contact him, please visit the podcast section at www.helpmesara.com. You can also subscribe to Help Me Sara podcasts on iTunes, to my Facebook page, which is Sara Dimmerman, Help Me Sara, or follow me on Twitter at Help Me Sara. Until next time.